You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I'm joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer. How are you, Michael?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Almost got drowned in the rain outside. But such is Vancouver.
You can't not like rain and live in Vancouver.
No.
Or in the Northwest, really, because really we get a ton of rain.
Yeah. Though, on the days it is sunny, it is worth all the rain. It really is.
I agree.
It's how we stay so green.
So has it been a slow news week? I mean, I don't think there's anything going on. No rumors.
It was slow up until the last 2 days, basically. Thursday. Thursday was the big news day. So Nintendo had a new Nintendo Direct, which was just sort of okay. They announced a new Paper Mario, which looks like the watered-down 3DS Paper Mario games. No in-depth RPG system, no super complicated story. Like, basically, fans of Paper Mario are looking for Thousand Year Door 2, or even Super Paper Mario 3. But what we're getting is Paper Mario Sticker Star 2, pretty much.
Would you like to explain what Paper Mario is? Because I have no idea.
Okay, so Paper Mario, it was an RPG game that first came out on, oh God, fans are going to crucify me
for this. N64?
I think it was N64. Yeah. Yeah, the first Paper Mario was N64. And it featured a 2D Mario cutout as the hero. And everything was turn-based, and you had certain attacks, you leveled up, you got new items. And the battle system was quite interesting because it relied on timing and pressing a button at the right time or tilting the control stick or what have you, not only to attack, but also to evade enemy attacks. So if you master the system and play it successfully, you can actually do critical damage on the enemy and not take any damage yourself, which is really cool. It also had quite an expansive story, quests, that sort of thing. And that was only expanded to a pretty insane degree when they made the sequel on GameCube, which was Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door, which is widely considered to be one of the best games Nintendo has ever made. It's right up there with Ocarina of Time, pretty much, on most people's lists.
You know, it's funny. I always laugh when people on social media say, well, I can't believe Nintendo is still milking the whole Mario IP. Like, why don't they make other stuff? I think it should go away. I'm like, that's not going to happen.
Mario is Nintendo.
And it has been at the core of their business since day one. So
yeah,
I mean, you've got another thing coming if you think Mario's is going to go away for any period of time.
No, there's no chance.
I mean, I think it will continue and hopefully go through some kind of evolution, and they'll continue to try new things maybe that they haven't done before. But yeah, I don't think he's going to go away.
I mean, they do try new things. Like Paper Mario was a new thing. I mean, they had done an RPG before. They had Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars for Super Nintendo, I want to say. So this was kind of a spiritual sequel, only they did this thing with the paper cutout people. So then the GameCube sequel comes out, widely considered to be one of the best Nintendo games ever. Then, for the Wii, they release Super Paper Mario, which was nearly as good, but clearly a decline from the quality of Thousand Year Door. So if Thousand Year Door was a 10, Super Paper Mario was an 8. Then the series kind of went dormant for a while. And then all of a sudden they announce a Paper Mario for 3DS called Paper Mario Sticker Star. And in that game, the story is like in Thousand Year Door, the story is incredibly detailed. You've got a bunch of characters, really clever writing and jokes. Sticker Star comes out, very simplistic writing. The battle system is diluted quite considerably. You basically just do simple jump and hammer attacks, and then you have the stickers that you can collect, and you like throw them out of your sticker book or whatever. And that's about it. Very simple compared to what came before. And it just feels like either A, they don't know what to do with the series, or B, they've stopped caring about it. And so now they've announced this new one for Wii U, Paper Mario. God, what was it called? Prism, Paint Prism, or Paint Splash. Basically, Mario goes to this island. I think it's called Prism Island. And something has started taking the color out of things. And so he gains a paint hammer and the ability to restore color to those things. And in the trailer, it looks like we're basically getting more of the same. Incredibly simplistic battle system, very limited storytelling compared to previous iterations. Just, It just feels very underwhelming to see what was once one of the best games Nintendo has ever made fall to this very simple game that is just kind of okay.
Do you think it's that Nintendo is maybe spread too thin between too many titles and that they cannot devote the time and attention or care needed in order to put out that
I feel game? Like that's probably the issue. They are making a lot more games than they used to, and I'm not sure how big their staff is, but excuse me. I don't know if they're hiring a lot of people. They might have like between 500 and 1,000 employees. I don't know how many are actually developing games. They have their localization teams for Nintendo Europe and Nintendo America. I think the main development is still done in Nintendo Japan. I don't actually know any of the numbers on that, but I would assume that it's probably between 500 and 1,000 people. Split into various teams. And then, of course, you have the second-party vendors that Nintendo has, like Game Freak that produces Pokemon, HAL Laboratories, which makes Super Smash Brothers. So I think it's entirely possible that they are spread too thin. They churn out a lot of games every year. And the thing with Nintendo now is they have very little third-party support. So a big chunk of the games they release every year are games they make themselves.
Right. And this is something we've talked about before, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we came to the conclusion that it was because developers continue to be disinterested in the platform because of the... it's a combination of things, but I think it boil down to just the underpowered hardware and the fact that they were continued to be frustrated that they're not able to realize their own creative vision in bringing a game to their platform because it simply is not feasible.
Yeah.
Without making a game look like complete garbage, and not just visually, but in the sheer scope as games continue to get bigger and bigger in terms of scope. Like, for example, No Man's Sky on PlayStation 4, which could potentially be or very well may be the largest game ever and the most ambitious game ever in terms of world design. And like, how can you even bring that to the Wii U? You can't.
It seems highly unlikely.
Which is why, and we've talked about before, why Nintendo needs to do this new NX console with current generation hardware that's capable of empowering developers to embrace the platform and bring to fruition games that meet their creative vision, I guess.
Yeah. So to me, I think what's happening is they're losing third-party games. They did have a few announcements about third-party games in the Nintendo Direct. They talked about that really cool-looking Persona Fire Emblem crossover with, like, J-pop numbers. Like, the battle system is like you're doing a concert, and it looks really insane. But that's a third-party title.
But not a whole heck of a lot. Yeah, going on there.
Yeah. So, I mean, every now and then there's a really cool looking third party title, but most of the time it's a Nintendo game that's getting announced. So I think given the supply of third party titles being at a trickle for Nintendo consoles, Nintendo has increasingly felt pressure to create more and more games for their platforms.
Oh, sure.
In order to justify the value proposition, which I feel is silly because they've already released some really high quality titles. They don't need to prove anything to anyone by continuing to churn out titles every few months.
Right. Like, right.
I would rather they focus on producing the high quality titles that we've come to expect from them. Like, I don't want to see Mario 5. Grandpa Mario needs glasses, you know, like I don't need to see games that clearly they didn't spend a lot of time on, like this watered down Paper Mario
or Princess Peach being the one that needs to be saved every single time.
Yeah,
that same plot being rehashed over and over and over.
Yeah,
again.
I mean, how difficult is it to do scenario design when you already know the story you're telling every single time, except like they basically change up the premise. Like, oh, Bowser kidnaps Princess Peach. How is he going to do it this time? And yeah, like it gets really frustrating. And I also feel like increasingly Nintendo is getting out of touch with its main fan base. I know they try to appeal to everyone, but the fact of the matter is their core fan base has grown up. The people that grew up with Nintendo when they started, people that have been with Nintendo since the NES,
right,
are now in their 20s and 30s.
And possibly have their own families and kids now.
Yeah.
And introducing a whole new generation
exactly.
into Nintendo.
So that's their key market segment. And I feel like they're increasingly not addressing that market segment. For example, they talked more about their new Metroid game, and I use Metroid with heavy air quotes, Federation Force for 3DS. And this was the game that drew a lot of salt from fans at E3 last year. It doesn't have Samus. And it features a squad of big-headed Federation troopers fighting space pirates. Some of the gameplay details seem fairly innovative. There's a squad mechanic where you have to manage gear between people because all the gear has weight and each team member can only carry so much. So you have to pick and choose what mm-hmm. each person takes. That's kind of cool. But I can't help but feel like the game was an original idea that someone said, this isn't going to make money as an original IP. We need to slap a brand on it. And someone went, oh, how about Metroid? We haven't done any Metroid games in a while.
But they're not calling it Metroid.
Yeah, they are.
They are. Okay.
It's called Metroid Federation Force.
Okay.
So it's set in the Metroid universe, but Samus isn't in it. And
which is odd because I know she's such a popular character.
Absurdly popular.
Like universally popular. Why wouldn't you have her?
Yeah. And again, like the fans, and when I say the fans, I'm including myself in this. We don't want to see random Metroid games that don't have Samus. We want to see a new Metroid Fusion, like a new 2D Metroid game, which would look amazing on the 3DS. Could you even imagine? Like, maybe not even 2D, like 3D with Samus going like forwards and backwards in perspective. Like the level has levels
right.
that you can see in 3D.
Sure.
Kind of like the newer Kirby games for 3D. Those do the same thing. So I feel like they could probably make a really cool new Metroid game using the same mechanics, but they just haven't. And it seems like a no-brainer to me that that's what people really want. People want either a new Metroid Prime-like game for Wii U, because they haven't done one of those either. They had Metroid Prime 3 for Wii, and that was it. Then they released Metroid Other M, which we will pretend never happened.
I never played it. I mean, I've never even played a Metroid game other than for more than 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the most popular Nintendo franchise, I would say, but the fan base is very dedicated.
Well, the franchise seems to be much beloved.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it's a female protagonist, which at the time was incredibly unusual for a video game.
You never knew that though.
You did if you unlocked the secret ending at the end of the game. And that was in the 80s.
Right.
And
that blew a lot of people's minds.
And then Super Metroid expanded on that, and every subsequent game has expanded further the character of Samus Aran. And it just seems really odd that in a franchise where you have single-mindedly focused on a single character,
yes,
you would attempt to release a title that does not involve that character at all. It would be like a Zelda game that doesn't have Link in it, or Zelda.
Basically. That doesn't make any sense. It's just like taking a big franchise like, can you imagine if they did something with like Mario and Luigi where suddenly like they are not even they're not like front and center as far as characters in the game. Like if they become relegated to some unimportant character and they introduce some other characters that nobody cares about.
Yeah, but the thing with the Mario franchise is they've had standalone games that haven't included Mario or Luigi, like Captain Toad.
Right, right.
But the thing with those games is they've earned those games because throughout the franchise, they've built up those characters.
Sure.
We've seen Toad throughout every single Mario game. And so when the time came to make a game about Toad, people are like, oh, cool, a game about Toad. That's awesome. Because people know who Toad is. But with this, it's just like, hey, you all love Samus. The only character you know pretty much is Samus. Now here's this game about four nobodies. It's a complete disconnect.
I can see why people would be upset by that.
And it's just really unfortunate because the creator of Federation Force has obviously put a lot of work into this game. He really cares about it. It's an idea he's had for a long time. They actually interviewed him during the Nintendo Direct, and he talked all about it. Like, it's clearly a passion project for him. And the entire fan base is basically shitting on it.
What other... there are some things I want to get to as far as just getting your thoughts and feelings on as far as Nintendo, where they're headed and where they are right now. But so other than this Mario Paper game, what else have they announced?
So there was the Metroid game.
Right, the Metroid
game. They also talked more about Star Fox Zero, which they confirmed a release date for. They showed off more of the gameplay. They also revealed that that tech demo that Miyamoto did with the Wii U, I think it was when they unveiled the Wii U maybe, or the year after that at E3, he showed off a game where you used security cameras to attack robots that were trying to break in. That has now become a Star Fox game called Star Fox Guard, which will be shipped with Star Fox Zero. So if you buy Star Fox Zero, you get Star Fox Guard with it. And it's the same mechanic that was in the tech demo at E3. You have a number of security cameras and robots will come in. It's set on this mining planet and Slippy's uncle is trying to mine this mineral. And there are these robots, I guess, I don't know, Star Wolf or something. And they're trying to steal the mineral. And it's your job to man the security cameras and point the turrets at the robots and stop them from stealing the minerals.
Is this new Star Fox game a reboot or is it a continuation of direct sequel of any of the previous games?
I'm not sure where in the timeline it takes place. All the Star Fox games do have a timeline as far as I know. I'm not sure where this one fits in.
Mm-hmm. Or at least some kind of continuity.
Yeah, it will fit into the existing continuity. It's more of a reboot towards the original Star Fox games, less like Star Fox Assault and Star Fox Adventures. I actually liked Star Fox Adventures. I thought that was a pretty cool game, but that's me. I think maybe five other people liked it, but. Yeah. So yeah, they announced that. Then they announced, and this was probably the best announcement, Super NES titles on Virtual Console for the new Nintendo 3DS.
Ooh, nice.
So the initial launch titles, which are out now, are Super Mario World, Pilot Wings, and... Oh God, I'm forgetting the other one.
Are these upscaled or in some way?
No, original resolution right on the 3DS screen. Okay. So they fit perfectly on there.
Actually, speaking of resolution, just as an aside, do you listen to the ATP podcast?
No.
Okay. So this week, John Siracusa went on a big rant again about... overscan mode and the Wii U and how they still cannot that the Wii U is really, really dumb. He talked about how he was like running, I don't remember what game it was, but it was running like a legacy game and it ended up having like black bars all around the game because it just, and he had to like reset the TV to like make it, he had to put it into overscan mode so it would fill the screen to make it look right because the Wii U can't handle things properly. It was just, it's like another thing that just makes me think, why does anybody buy this unit? Hopefully they'll fix all this stuff in the NX.
Yeah, I'm really hoping the NX turns things around. Like, I really like the 3DS.
Yeah.
They've released some really amazing games for the 3DS.
I think they were sort of onto something with the sort of tablet detached thingy console where you could play games. Like, it feels like they had this idea that like, felt like it was just like you can see there was something there,
yeah,
but they weren't able to, the execution wasn't right.
I mean, if they had made a sleeker piece of hardware that was more comfortable to hold, I could see it taking off, but again, instead they released what I have called the Fisher Price iPad.
It is kind of clunky and not entirely well made. Like, it doesn't feel like quality plastic.
Oh God, no! It's absurdly glossy plastic. Just
that's
really
another thing. It's a fingerprint magnet, especially the black one. Like, it looks disgusting.
Yeah, I have the black one. It's not great. Yeah. It's really not great.
Anyways, you were saying, but it sounded like you had some other titles that you wanted to talk about.
Right. So they also announced a new Kirby for Wii U, Kirby Robo Planet, where robots attack Dreamland and Kirby gets a mech suit that can also steal powers.
That sounds like fun.
It looks kind of cool.
Has he ever had a mech suit? Is that a new thing? Or?
Yeah, that's a totally new thing. So he's still going to have his copy powers. Like, he's still going to be able to suck enemies in and take their ability. But then in certain...
Which is horrifying if you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Terrible. And then in certain levels, he's going to get this robo suit that can also take abilities somehow.
And who made it for him?
He steals it from the invading robots and somehow reconfigures it, I guess. You heard it here first. Kirby is Tony Stark. So yeah, that actually looks pretty decent. I'm not sure how good it'll end up being. hopefully it's good. Kirby, the yarn one was fairly good. Or was that Yoshi? I think that was Yoshi. It's all a blur. They just release these games and it's like I don't think Nintendo's, other than Splatoon, Nintendo hasn't really released a game in the past year.
What's the only, or Splatoon two. Is the only one that stands out to me.
Yeah, like in the past year or two on Wii U, Nintendo hasn't really released a game that's gotten higher than a 7 or 8 out of 10 overall. Splatoon is the only standout as far as I can see. And that's disappointing, but I think they're probably putting all their chips into the NX. I think the new Zelda game that's coming out, according to a leak, there is going to be an NX version of that game. So I think when the new Zelda comes out, that's going to be the launch of the NX. And they're going to do the same thing that they did with the game that just got re-released on Wii U today, Twilight Princess. So if you'll remember, Nintendo launched Twilight Princess on the same day that the Wii came out. And the thing there was, they released a GameCube version of Twilight Princess and a Wii version of Twilight Princess. So if you bought a Wii, you could still play the new Zelda game. And it also acted as the GameCube swan song. Like, it was literally the last major Nintendo game released for the GameCube. So I think the exact same thing will happen here. The brand new Zelda game will be on Wii U and on NX, and it'll pretty much be the end for Wii U at that point.
And the NX is supposed to come out when? Do we know when it's coming out this year? Is it even still coming out this year?
It is coming out this year. My guess would be sometime around August or September.
Sure. And there haven't been any leaks as far as what the design is going to look like.
No leaks about the design, but the leaks have suggested that the NX is coming out at the end of the year with the new Zelda game.
And it better blow everyone out of the water.
Well, I'm pretty sure they're going to unveil it at E3, so we don't have long to wait.
Yeah. When is E3?
June.
Okay, so not that much longer.
No. And that'll probably be either the week after or the week before WWDC, or if the gods are kind, same week, and we can just indulge in ridiculous nerd geek out.
The NX better be some 8-core processor monster at this point, because
It needs
longevity.
It needs to be an x86. It needs to have similar specs to the PS4 and the Xbox One, probably leaning closer to the PS4, I would say, because the PS4 is more powerful. Though an interesting thing happened the other day with Microsoft. They seemed to suggest that they would be looking at hardware upgrades for the Xbox One mid-cycle.
How is that going to work?
I have no idea.
Other than the hard drive.
It may have something to do with their upcoming Universal Windows platform, where games and apps are built using the Windows 10 SDK. So they might have a provision in there where it acts like a PC, where if you load up a game, it goes, okay, what hardware do you have? Oh, okay, we're going to use medium settings for this console. We're going to use high settings for this console, etc. So they might be able to release a new Xbox One that's basically a PC with a better GPU, better CPU, and then...
It's very interesting.
The game will load on the new Xbox and go, oh, you've got the new Xbox. I'm going to turn on like better anti-aliasing, better this, better that.
Sure.
Hair physics.
Right.
Like all the bells and whistles.
That's, you know, one thing I always thought that... Because game consoles need to have longevity. They need to be able, because obviously there are huge cycles. Like the PS3 lasted probably too long, like what, 8 years or something.
At the same time, Microsoft, I mean, they make stuff for PCs, right?
Right.
And PCs can have whatever components, and they need to plan for that. So they make a platform that's adaptable. And they've slowly but surely been moving Xbox onto that platform. So if once they get fully there, they can basically say, well, our consoles are now effectively like the Steam machine, where it's more or less Windows 10, but it runs the Xbox UI shell. And if you build a PC game, it will run on Xbox.
Why don't they make consoles like modular devices where you can literally hot swap like a GPU, hot
because
swap
because regular
CPU?
People don't want to do that.
You don't think people would? I mean, that would be additional revenue.
Average people, I don't think, will buy new hardware components that they have to swap. Hmm. It's just too confusing.
You think that's just the market
for
is,
the
is
average
too
customer?
Niche.
Yeah,
like we're talking for, maybe 5% of a customer base.
Yeah, like for the average customer, that's just extra confusion that doesn't need to be there. Like if you're an enthusiast, you're going, yeah, I'm going to get this new GPU and I'm going to put it in, and yeah, I'm going to get 20% higher
frame
rate.
Don't like if they did yearly hardware upgrades for the CPU and GPU, they probably like parents are probably not going to want their kid coming to them every year asking them to buy a new GPU and CPU for their Xbox.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that they're probably going to have to play by ear. I don't think they're going to be able to necessarily do one every year because that makes things difficult on development cycles.
My concern is that obviously the Apple TV is absolutely no competition for consoles. But
not
my
yet.
Concern, that's where I'm going with this, yeah. is that my concern is over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years that the Apple TV is going to be so powerful and so compelling for game development that suddenly these dedicated consoles that get updated once every 6 years are not going to be able to, they're not going to be competitive.
Yeah, and that's where I think Microsoft is going with this. They're realizing that traditional console cycles aren't an option anymore. So they're hybridizing the idea of a console with the PC,
yeah.
with the idea that technology improves every 6 months. So every 12 to 24 months,
yeah.
we can release a new console. And because of our software platform, the games will adapt to that. So, I mean, even if we get a new Xbox that's dramatically faster, you could load up a new game that was built for that Xbox on your old Xbox. It would still run. It would just run with some of the settings turned off.
Sure.
Just like a PC game.
I don't understand why consoles need to physically be so big today, because why aren't they miniaturizing their logic boards and components to save space and money? Like Apple can fit in this tiny puck
right.
an incredibly powerful
right.
processor.
But Apple has been doing this for years.
That's very true.
They've been refining a singular product for a decade now.
But maybe this is something Sony and Microsoft can no longer avoid. Maybe they
right.
should be investing
so
in that design.
If in fact Microsoft is moving to this model where the Xbox One becomes a PC effectively, then they could iterate.
Right.
They could shrink that device down.
And Sony and Nintendo would have no choice but to
follow.
To yeah. follow that. Otherwise they would become irrelevant pretty quickly.
Yeah. Because at that point we're talking dramatic power boosts every year or every other year, to the point where developers go, well, if I'm looking to make absolute bleeding edge graphics on a game, I'm going to go with Xbox because yeah. they're putting like the latest NVIDIA chips into their boxes every other year. So yeah, that is going to create if they go that route, that's going to create immense market pressure on Sony and Nintendo, because they will risk being left behind. Sony, I honestly don't know if they're equipped to do that. They spend a lot of time developing those chipsets. Like the Cell chip and the PS3, they worked on that a long time. And the same
but they moved away from that architecture with the PS4, right?
They did. I mean, the PS4 and the Xbox One are effectively the same yeah. architecture, more or less.
Are they using Intel CPUs?
I think it's AMD.
AMD, okay. So it's some kind of custom multi-core
yeah.
chip.
Yeah, it's slightly modified from off-the-shelf AMD APUs, I think.
Well, they have to for to keep the cost down. Otherwise, you can't make a $400 console.
Yeah, exactly. And then whereas Microsoft chose certain options for their chip, Sony optimized for performance.
Right.
And they included the more expensive but much faster GDDR5 RAM, whereas Microsoft stuck with GDDR4.
It's frustrating that the PS4 has a crappy, still does not have, shipped, I shouldn't say still, it shipped with without BTLE4. And the Wi-Fi chip on it is not good at all.
Oh my God. I don't even bother. Mine's plugged into Ethernet. I can't even use the Wi-Fi on that thing. Destiny would crap out every 20 minutes. Like, I would just get error codes all the time.
You know, it's strange to me that Microsoft has released a new controller for the Xbox One, but Sony hasn't released a new version of the PS4 controller. And I always hope that they will release a modified version with better battery life, because battery life is atrocious.
I could see them doing that. One thing with consoles is, well, I guess you could, because now most games have online patches.
Right.
So if a developer was still supporting a game, they could just add support for a new control setup, in theory.
I'm not even talking about changing buttons or anything. I'm just saying make a new controller battery, for God's sakes.
But with Microsoft, like, obviously the Xbox One Elite controller is a little different.
Sure.
If you add the pedals and everything.
That's not a big deal, but to add support for the...
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something in the API framework.
So I would imagine.
Use this profile, so. This framework to download this profile or whatever.
Yeah, I would think so. I know Halo 5 supports the Elite controller pretty well.
But doesn't Microsoft still develop Halo? Isn't that their...
Oh yeah, that's internal.
So of course, that game is going to support every piece of functionality.
Exactly.
Right.
It should be technically feasible. If we move to a PC cycle of upgrades, then it's entirely feasible that a company could also iterate on the controller every other year. Like, oh, now the controller lasts this long, and we've refined it, and these buttons are clickier, and it's more durable, and so on and so forth. I think the big problem with consoles is that every console is effectively a burn after reading device. It's something that they make in a singular moment for a singular period of time, and then they move on to the next design. There's almost no iteration per se. Like, they effectively start over and go, okay, it's 20 whatever. What components can we use? What other stuff can we use? How do we build a console around that? I don't know how far they take learnings from the previous console and apply them to the new console, because they throw out so much and start over with new components for the year that they start designing the console for. So, I mean, the PS3 was developed way back in... when did the PS3 come out? Like 2006?
No, 2007? Before that. Let's look that up.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think you were right. It was released at the end of 2006.
Okay. So they probably spent about 4 years developing it or so. Maybe five. I think they said they put a ton of work into that cell chip. They basically spend half of a console cycle designing the next console, but the next console usually has an entirely different chipset from the previous one, especially this time around, because they moved from PowerPC over to x86. So there was ultimately zero carryover between them. the controllers have evolved. Like, I would say the controllers have iterated since their original forms.
Oh, certainly.
Xbox to Xbox 360 to Xbox One. Right. There's a clear evolution there.
Same with PS.
DualShock to DualShock 4. Clear evolution there.
Well, I think a lot of people forget that the first PlayStation controller had no analog controls on it.
Oh, yeah.
The analog controller didn't. It was just the D-pad or whatever they call it.
Then they had the DualShock 2, which was analog. So the controllers have definitely iterated. And I would say on the consoles, there has been iteration, but sporadic and kind of random. Like, if you looked at the N64 versus the GameCube versus the Wii, those are three very different devices. So it's hard to see where there's a crossover there. The PS3 to the PS4 is maybe a bit more straightforward. But moving to a PC architecture, I think you gain a certain cohesiveness where you can say the GPUs will be effectively the same. They just get better. The CPUs will be effectively the same. They just get better, and so on. And from that jumping off point, you can kind of make long-term decisions about, okay, we know that we're always going to have an Intel chip or an AMD chip and an NVIDIA GPU or an AMD GPU. And so let's look at die shrinks. Let's look at shrinking the logic board. Let's look at optimizing the fans and the heat sinks. Let's look at shrinking down that package and optimizing for performance versus energy consumption versus whatever. And they can really take steps to just make the console better and better with every release, especially if they're moving to a yearly or alternate year upgrade plan, because then they can effectively, like, Microsoft can basically say Xbox One is the once and future console for Xbox. We're just going to release a new one every other year that has better components. And so then over time, like the iPhone, everything gets smaller, everything gets faster, everything gets more efficient, because they don't need to go back to that drawing board every 4 years. They can just have a timeline. They can have a plan that iterates from one device to the next without having to go, okay, cool, time for a new console. What do we do now? You know, like they can, it kind of gives them a freedom to not have to worry about the hardware as much and maybe focus on input and other concerns, software.
That makes a lot of sense. I think it's a very reasonable approach and would be better for the platform as a whole. And who knows, maybe that is the direction that Nintendo, PlayStation will take as well in the future, is that they realize that it's becoming increasingly harder and harder to compete with mobile phones, because we have these smartphone devices that become increasingly powerful.
Yeah.
Where we can make these amazing games on these devices, and those are the devices people have with them all the time.
Yeah. And not only that, the very game engines that are on consoles are now also on the phones. You've got Unreal Engine 4 on iOS and Android.
That's right.
You've got Unity on iOS and Android. Those engines are used to create a ton of console games and indie games on Steam. So with access to those on mobile, it's now that much easier to create AAA titles. I mean, maybe not like a Grand Theft Auto or something, though they have successfully ported several Grand Theft Autos to iOS and Android. But
I think this is mainly because of the App Store and the expectation as far as pricing is concerned for games, but it seems like AAA game developers have largely ignored the App Store, because, like, why aren't all the titles that we see on PlayStation, like, why isn't there a Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain on iOS, like an exact version of the PS4 game on iOS. Well, because the thing is, can you imagine a game like that showing up on the iOS App Store for $60? Who's going to buy that?
Yeah, it's...
There's something about the justification of, I cannot justify $60 for a game on a device that's like 5 inches big.
Yeah, it's going to be
weird
difficult.
Mentality.
It's going to be difficult to overcome that. I will say that. But I think Apple could probably do more to kind of help developers get through that issue.
Like, why isn't there an App Store category, or they could very well do this, but they could just have a category where it's like AAA, showcasing AAA games.
Oh, yeah, they could easily do that.
Premium games section where the expectation is that all those games are going to be more expensive.
Or they even roll out a game store.
Right.
But I mean, that's if they actually care a great deal about
gaming on iOS. You mean
like
actually separate it from the App Store?
Yeah.
I don't know if they would want to do that.
Well, to me, games and apps are two very different things.
Sure, because a game isn't an app.
So, like with iBooks, you don't get books through the App Store.
Right.
You don't get songs through the App Store. So games are another form of media. Why should they be in the same place as pages?
It makes sense. Like on the back end, it doesn't matter to customers. On the back end, it may use the exact same App Store architecture.
Oh, yeah.
But the customer doesn't need to
know
that.
They all do. They all use WebObjects.
Right.
But I think if they want to take gaming seriously, if they want to actually build this platform for game developers, it would really help to create a game store. A separate game store.
No, I agree. I think it has to happen.
And they could integrate Game Center into that architecture.
Game Center. Who cares about that?
I mean, yeah. Nobody opens the Game Center app, but I mean, we're kind of happy that it's there, sort of.
I don't remember the last time I opened. Does it still have that felt background?
No, it has this weird bubble thing going on now.
The bubble thing,
yeah.
Right.
Just give me a plain
certain
list.
Design just, decisions that Apple makes, I'm like just shaking my head like, what is going on with Apple?
Yeah, that was a really bizarre choice. Like the entire rest of the OS goes flat, everything's lists, there's no more felt or textures or anything, and oh, here's Game Center with shiny bubbles. Like
it's like something Mugatu would have designed. It's part of the Derelict brand. Do you think Nintendo is floundering?
I think they're probably in a bit of a holding pattern right now. I think the issue is they're bleeding money on the Wii U. They're doing fairly well with the 3DS, but they're bleeding money on the Wii U. Like the Wii U is basically dying on the table, and they have the NX, which they hope will successfully replace it and kind of restore the balance for them, but it's not ready yet and they haven't announced it and it's still basically a year away. So in the meantime, all they can do is continue releasing Wii U games and just kind of putter along until they're ready to switch over.
The Wii U feels really old to me, and it isn't in many ways technologically speaking, I just looked it up and it says that it was launched in 2012, which isn't that long ago.
No, but the problem is it was released using components that were older.
It was already old out of the box.
Yeah. The Wii U is effectively slightly more powerful than an Xbox 360. So the maximum potential for the Wii U is basically Halo 4.
The processing, I mean, inside every Wii U is just a hamster running on a wheel.
Not quite. But it's not the most powerful console. I mean, Nintendo has worked wonders with it.
It was certainly, when it came out, it was not nearly as bad as the GameCube, which was unbelievably underpowered.
Yeah.
When 720p was ubiquitous, it came out, it was like 420.
Yeah.
or something like yeah. that. It was ridiculous.
They kind of caught the tail end of that. Though the GameCube was a really good console.
Well, lots of great games on it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a neat shape and like kind of a cool design.
Yeah, I would kind
great controller too, that WaveBird controller.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they've basically admitted as much because the fight controller for Super Smash Brothers is literally a re-released GameCube controller.
Which, of course, they did re-release the WaveBird controller, which became really popular on the yeah. Wii U. So that says something about the success and of that particular design. The fact that they brought it back was totally admitting, yeah, this pretty much was and is our best controller.
Yeah. I mean, before the other, well, no, it was out around the same time as the DualShock 2, so it had the trigger buttons.
Right. But then there was that, didn't they do that really awesome, what was it? I don't remember the name, the Wireless Pro or something like that, the Wireless Nintendo Pro?
Yeah.
That was supposed to be really good.
So with the Wii U, they released a kind of weird wireless controller. Do you remember the old leaked images of what the DualShock 3 was supposed to look like, where it was kind of a weird boomerang?
No, I don't.
No. So they ended up releasing a quote-unquote pro controller, and it's kind of boomerang-esque, like really elongated and just kind of awkward looking. I mean, it's not terrible. I think people have said it's not that bad.
So when you get pissed off and throw your controller at the TV, it actually comes flying back and hits you in the head?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. but ultimately, I think the GameCube controller was just, they just nailed it the first time with that thing. It just fits the hand so well, and you have access to all the buttons, and it's just really intuitive. There's probably places you could improve it, but overall, I think it was just a really solid controller design, and the fact that they've re-released it just kind of proves that. I worry about Nintendo. I do.
As do we all, and as does the rest of the world. Well, especially after Miyamoto, right? Going away, I mean.
Not Iwata, you mean.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Iwata. Yeah, no. Don't scare me like that.
I'm getting confused.
Don't scare me like that. Miyamoto's still here. No.
Yeah,
he's fine.
You know, obviously there's a concern, you know, which is duly noted, that when a CEO of a company that is much beloved, that is, you know, a creative visionary, goes away, it's really hard. Like, how do you fill those shoes? Is that even possible? What is going to happen to the future of the company? It's a concern. Yeah,
it is concerning.
And also, I think, you know, also when Steve Jobs passed, and I'm sure many people have asked this question about Nintendo, when Iwata died, is that, you know, what was left in terms of the product pipeline that has his legacy attached? Like,
well,
do we have another year's worth of games that are going to be coming out that he had influence
the
on?
The NX was his project.
Right.
It was his baby. So that'll hopefully see Nintendo through for another 3 years or 4 years until inevitably we get a new PlayStation and a new Xbox. Or, I mean... If Microsoft is following through with this PC strategy, we might see a new Xbox One sooner than later.
I think it's entirely possible that we'll also see mid update with the PS4, like a slim down version.
Oh yeah,
a smaller power supply. And you know,
we always get that.
We always get that. But I think at the very least they could easily do like a
Bluetooth 4. Oh,
yeah, like a wireless
4.
Update.
Yeah.
Like a, you know, better Bluetooth connect, like Bluetooth LE 4.2, you know, 802.11 AC chip.
Yeah.
Better, a refreshed controller with better battery life. Like, people would buy that.
Well, even just upgrading to Bluetooth 4.2 would give it better battery life.
By default, yeah.
Yeah. So, Yeah, I could honestly see them doing that because, yeah, they did release the console mm-hmm. with really bad wireless connectivity. So now that they've been making the chip for a while, now that they can do a die shrink and it costs less to manufacture, they can,
miniaturize a smaller
do a slim PS4 right. and yeah. add some better wireless sure. technology. Like yeah. that seems like a no-brainer to me. And they can release new DualShock 4 controllers that support it, and yeah. they'll last probably twice as long, and that'll be fine.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio with Michael Norton, as always, and myself, I'm Alex Knight. If you'd like to support the show, there are a few ways you can do that. I'm going to tell you about that right now. One of the best ways to do that is to visit our new Patreon page by going to patreon.com/hologramradio. You can give us a couple of bucks or whatever you feel comfortable with. That helps us immensely cover our operational costs. Please, please do that. We do not have sponsors at the moment, other than technically Amazon, I guess, but that's more of an affiliate thing. You can also leave us a rating on iTunes and subscribe to the show to make sure you get every new episode each and every week. And if you have a minute, why don't you drop us a comment or 5-star rating? That helps new people find the show as well. You can visit hologramradio.org/sponsors. We have links for Amazon UK, USA, and Canada. And of course, we all like to shop at Amazon these days, and there's no additional work needed on your part other than just click on the banner. So if you do shop at Amazon, just click on the banner, and we get a couple of bucks on every sale that goes through. You can also follow the show on Twitter at The Impromptu. If you'd like to find out more about the other great podcasts on this network, you can follow us at Hologram Radio. We're also Hologram Radio on Facebook as well, and on Instagram now, where Hologram Radio shows. And if you'd like to send us some feedback to either Michael or myself, send us an email at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org. That's theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening. See you next time.